go ahead. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for being with us, Larry. Larry and Anita, they're famous, but then they're famous here because many of you guys know Savoe and Christina. And so they're proud parents there. And Savoe and them have just taken another big assignment, big step. And so pray for them in Illinois, and praying God's going to bless their ministry there. And so we're excited about them, how God's using them. This morning we're going to jump back into it. We're jumping back into 1 Samuel. 1 Samuel is an awesome book. We've been walking through it. And today what we're talking about is really a pivotal chapter. And so last week we were in chapter 11, which chapter 11, if you wasn't here, that is like the best chapter Saul has. Like, that's it. That's really it. I mean, you need to highlight that chapter because that he shines in chapter 11 and just goes downhill from there. But today, what we're looking at today, it's pivotal because there's a change happening, and we see it happen in chapter 12. So what's happening is, leading up to this, it's been the age of judges, right? So a judge like Samuel would lead Israel. God would talk to the judge. The judge would give the prophecy to the people, and that's how the communications went. That's how they were led. That's the way it's been. But what we see happen today in chapter 12, they're changing from the judge to the monarchy system. So it's going from Samuel to Saul in this system. And what we see happening here today, especially in chapter 12, is that there's a danger in getting what you wish for. How many knows that to be true? There's a danger in getting what you wish for. How many of you have ever wished for, like, a certain car? And then you bought the car. And you're like, that's really not what I wish for. But then you're stuck with the car, right? Well, I know when Melissa and I first got married, we haven't been married but a year or so, and one vehicle went kaput, and we needed another one. And so I'm like, okay, I'll give me one just to drive to work and back, and it'd be great. I'm looking for a vehicle. I got a buddy. How many of those buddies get you in trouble? I got a buddy. He's like, hey, I know a car. All right. And he goes, it's a 70 Chevy Camaro. I'm like, okay, you had me a Camaro. I said, but let's go look at it. You know, that's like for a guy, that's kind of the kiss of death, kind of like the puppy thing. You don't go look at puppies. You don't go look at classic cars if you're looking for a car, right? So we go to the garage where this guy has this Camaro, and he's friends with the guy, and we're talking about it, and the guy starts it. And that's like it. He starts it, and my insides start to rumble. I'm like, okay, I'm sold. Like, that's all I need to know. Like, it shakes my inner core. I want that car, right? Because it's a hot rod. Like, he built this engine, custom built it for this vehicle. It's a fast car. That's all I need to know. I want it, okay? So I buy this car. It's awesome. It's blue, white racing stripes, right? It's the outside needs some work, but the engine, right? And so I'm loving life. It is fast. I'm like, I'm beating everybody on the road. Like, I'm taking it to car show, dragging it down Main. I mean, it's just awesome, right? And then winter hits. Again, we're married. I'm driving this to work. I get up fairly early to go to work. So the first winter hits, it gets cold. The frost hits. I get outside. I'm like, okay, it's not going to be fun. Scrape the outside of the windshield. Great. I sit down on the inside. I scraped the inside of the windshield. It has no heater. Has no air. But the engine makes your insides rumble. I mean, it's worth it, isn't it? Right? I mean, I wanted that. I wanted that car. Just because it made it sound, the way it ran. I mean, I loved that car. Until I didn't. And then I'm stuck with this car. Has no AC, which is fine. I can handle that. But the heater in Oklahoma. The defrost. There's no defrost. Like, the whole way to work, I'm like, I'm like looking out this little window, right? I'm like, okay, now I got to get rid of this. Well, nobody wants to buy a car with no heater. And so I'm stuck with it. And so there's a danger in getting what you wish for. And that's what we see happening here in this chapter. Because we live in a culture that's driven by desire for the next best thing, don't we? I mean, that's how this, the iPhone. They're on 17. They'll probably release 18 this year. And it's going to be better. And you're going to need it. How's it better? I don't know, but I guarantee it's going to be better than what you got. Right? And the one you got in your pocket is going to look antiquated to this. Because this new one's going to be 2% faster. You're like, oh, I need that in my life. Right? So the video, the camera is going to be so, it's going to be, you know, I can tell you right now, that's what's going to be. It's going to be faster. The picture's going to be better. How? I don't know. But they say so. And so you're going to need that in your life. And so we're caught in this culture of we look at what others have and we need that. We need their lifestyle. We need their success. We need their setup. And we say, I want that. This is exactly where we find Israel in 1 Samuel chapter 12. They looked at all the nations around them and they're like, everybody else has a king. We need a king. So they demanded a human king. They wanted the political security. They wanted the military might. And if we're honest, they just wanted to be like everybody else. In reality, we understand this is they were rejecting God in the truest sense. God granted their request, gives them Saul, but Samuel in chapter 12, he steps up to give his final speech, his retirement speech. And in doing so, he's going to deliver a reality check. And the reality check is this: getting what you demand doesn't mean you bypass God's standards. And so we're going to walk through this. We're going to see this played out in the life of the Israelites. So Samuel begins his farewell address by putting his own life on display, basically putting himself on trial. He asks the people, have I ever cheated you? Have I ever robbed you or taken a bribe? Look at it in verse 3 and 4. It says, here I am, testify against me before the Lord and before this nation, before his anointed. Whose ox have I taken? Whose donkey have I taken? Or whom have I defrauded? Whom have I oppressed? Or from whose hand have I taken a bribe to blind my eyes with it? Testify against me, and I will restore it to you. And this is how they respond in verse 4. They said, you have not defrauded us or oppressed us or taken anything from any man's hand. So Samuel's setting them up here. He's wanting them to say this. He's wanting them to say, Samuel, you're blameless. He's establishing his integrity at this point. And it wasn't just so he could brag. It wasn't to say, I'm high and mighty. No, it wasn't none of that. It was to show that Israel's demand for a king wasn't caused by a failure in godly leadership. Okay, this is important that you understand this. It was a failure in their own hearts. It wasn't on Samuel's part. He didn't fail them. And so this is their own doing here. This is their own fault. And sometimes that's harder here, isn't it? Let's be honest. No one wants to take the blame for their circumstances. It's easier to pass it on, isn't it? I didn't want to take the blame for buying this Camaro that I can't see out of in the winter. It's my buddy's fault. It's his fault. He introduced me to the guy, heard the engine, it's his fault. That's the way we operate, isn't it? We don't want to take the blame for our circumstances. It's never our fault. And this is what Samuel's trying to get them to see. He's like, hang on a second. This is your own doing. You asked for this. In a good time, a good judge, you asked for this. And so before we start blaming our circumstance, before we start blaming others for our discontentment, we've got to look in the mirror. Because it starts with us. And then we see, this is pretty fun, we see a cycle of forgetfulness. Now this is easier in the first service because a lot of them live in that cycle because they're older. Some of you are younger, you're not living there yet. And so, but I want to show you how this cycle of forgiveness applies to your life, okay? So then Samuel's going to take them on a history lesson. He reminds them how God rescued them from Egypt, about every time they cried out in the wilderness, God raised up a deliverer. And then look at verse 12. He says, and when you saw that Nahash, the king of Ammonites, came against you, you said to me, no, but a king shall reign over us. when the Lord your God was your king. Look what Samuel's saying to them. He's like, listen, God saved you, God saved you, God saved you, God saved you. And yet the moment a new threat appears, Israel panics. You see them slip in this cycle of forgetfulness. Like, think about how many miracles it took for them to get out of Egypt. All the plagues, I mean, things nobody had ever seen before. They get out of Egypt, they get a pillar of fire by night, a cloud by day. They get water from rock, they get little quail nuggets, they get bread. I mean, they get every miracle you can imagine. But they slipped in a cycle of forgetfulness and think, well, God forgot about us. We need a king. Instead of them trusting the invisible king who never failed them, they demanded a visible king. The issue here is Israel traded faith for sight. You see that? They wanted a king they could see, they could judge, they could blame. It's amazing how quickly we forget God's past faithfulness as soon as a crisis hits. One day God provided for you miraculously. One day God healed you. The next day you're facing this, you're like, God, where are you at? You left me. And when that happens, when the moment that new crisis happens, that cycle of forgetfulness throws us into human solutions, doesn't it? Isn't that I'm not the only one here, but isn't that the first place we turn? What can I do? What can I do? I can sell a few things, make an extra few bucks. I can get a side hustle. We can make it that way, or we can do this, or this relationship. I can fix this relationship, or I just need some power. We turn to ourselves because we forget. We slip in that cycle. God provided, God provided, God provided. Here's a crisis. Oh, what can I do? We fall in this crazy cycle of forgetfulness, and we get into this cycle of forgetfulness. We often confuse God's mercy with God's endorsement. And that's what we're going to see next, that you don't confuse God's mercy with God's endorsement. Samuel points to Saul, and so he said, here's the king. Here's the king you chose, but now you need to understand what you've done. This is a situation you caused. God has mercy, but don't confuse it with his endorsement of what you've done. Here he goes, and look at verse 13 through 18. And now behold the king whom you've chosen, for whom you've asked. Behold, the Lord set a king over you. If you will fear the Lord and serve him and obey his voice and not rebel against the commandment of the Lord, and if you both, you and the king who reigns over you, will follow the Lord your God, it will be well. Don't you love it if we could stop right there? But then we get to verse 15, that word we love to hate, but. But if you will not obey the voice of the Lord, but rebel against the commandment of the Lord, then the hand of the Lord will be against you and your king. Now, therefore, stand still and see this great thing the Lord will do before your eyes. Is it not wheat harvest today? I will call upon the Lord that he may send thunder and rain, and you shall know and see that your wickedness is great, which you have done in the sight of the Lord in asking for yourself a king. Okay, here's the part, right? Here's where you see that he's not endorsing it. He gave him grace, but he's not endorsing it. He said, you did evil. You did evil inside of the Lord when you asked for a king. And in verse 18, so Samuel called upon the Lord. The Lord sent thunder and rain that day, and all the people greatly feared the Lord and Samuel. Okay, so to prove that demanding a king was an act of rebellion against God, Samuel calls down a miracle. He calls down the miracle of thunder and rain in the time of harvest. Now, I know we got some farmers in here. When do you want to harvest your hay? When it's dry, right? Like, you don't want to roll it up when it's wet. It's going to do nobody no good. And so here's a harvest time, right? Here's a harvest time. They're going to go out and harvest wheat. So I was like, Samuel's like, okay, let me just show you that God didn't condone what you did. Call down rain and thunder. Because in time of harvest, this was really, rain was unheard of for them. They realize their sin. They cry out to the Lord in verse 19. And all the people said to Samuel, pray for your servants to the Lord your God that we may not die. For we have added to all of our sins this evil to ask for ourselves a king. So again, Samuel is clearly telling them, don't confuse God's mercy with his endorsement. Because I believe sometimes he's going to let us experience the harsh reality of our stubborn choices so that we wake up and see our need for him. This leads us to the last thing I want to point out from this story this morning in chapter 12. Fear not, just follow. Fear not, just follow. Look at verse 19. Well, actually, verse 20. If we ended in verse 19, there'd be a message of pure condemnation. But we don't. We get to verse 20. And Samuel's going to respond to their terror. He says, and Samuel said to people, do not be afraid. You've done all this evil. Look what it says. Yet do not turn aside from following the Lord, but serve him with your whole heart. This is the beautiful core of the gospel in the Old Testament, isn't it? Israel messed up. They couldn't hit undo on the kingship deal. Saul's on the throne. But Samuel tells them God's grace meets them right where their bad decision left them. So there's hope. They're not done. So yeah, they wanted this. They wanted this so bad. They thought this could fulfill them. This could make them happy. This could bring them security. They wanted this. In doing this, they rejected God. But Samuel's like, okay, hang on. Don't be afraid. You did evil. He's not letting them off the hook. You did evil, but don't turn aside from following God. Serve the Lord with all your heart. I want the worship team to come on up. Saul's going to leave us with three final commands for moving forward. Okay, so maybe you're in here this morning and you find yourself in that place. Maybe you're in a place where you wanted something. Now that you got it, you're like, okay, that was not a good thing. I did not honor God in that. Maybe I did not make God happy in that choice. Whatever reason being, maybe you're in that place. Okay, well, what do I do now? What do I do now? Okay, well, Samuel leaves us with three commands. The first one is this. Do not turn aside after empty things. Do not turn aside after empty things. I love Samuel. Samuel's one of my favorite judges. He speaks plainly. I love that. And he's pretty spicy. In every few chapters, we see him getting after a king with a sword. Saul wouldn't do it, so Samuel picks up the sword. He goes to town. I mean, it's crazy. So it gets good here a little bit, but Samuel's my kind of guy. But look at it in verse 21. He says, and do not turn aside after empty things. They cannot profit or deliver, for they are empty. He's like, you're turning aside for a human king. He's empty. He's got nothing. He can't offer you joy. He can't offer you security. He can't offer you hope. You're going after an empty thing. He's telling you this morning, don't turn aside to empty things. There's some relationships you think you have to have. They're empty. There's some things you think you need in your life to be happy, to be secure. They're empty. The things this world say you need to have to be happy, that's the empty things that Samuel's talking about. He's saying, don't turn these things, these empty things, they can't save you, but they tempt you. They tempt you to elevate these things in your life. Samuel's like, they're empty, they're useless. So don't turn aside to the empty things. Second command he gives us, trust God's commitment to you. I know some of y'all need to hear that this morning. Trust God's commitment to you. How often we run into a crisis, something goes wrong in our life, we're like, God, why have you forsaken me? Come on. Isn't that where we go? Look at verse 22. It says, for the Lord will not forsake his people. for his great name's sake, because it has pleased the Lord to make you a people for himself. Come on. You need to be reminded of this. He will not forsake his people. I love that last part, because it has pleased the Lord to make you a people for himself. Even though we make the choices, all that, it pleases the Lord because we're his people. Listen, our security rests on God's character and not your perfection. We need to learn to trust his commitment to us. We so easily forget about it, don't we? We'll come into service like today. We had great worship today, and we'll set the worship service today, and we're like, God, I can't feel you today. I think you left me. I love how Billy Graham would illustrate this. He talks about faith rests on facts, not feelings, and he gives this train analogy. Love it. So imagine a train, okay? The engine of the train represents fact, which is God's word, right? That's the engine. The coal car represents faith. Kind of feeds, feeds off one another. That's the engine, that's the coal car. He said the caboose represents our feelings. I mean, this is perfect. He says that the train runs whether or not the caboose is present. The train runs whether your feelings is present. In the same way, the Christian life is sustained by the facts of God's promises, not by our changing emotions. So you walk in here, and what the enemy wants you to think is, oh, I don't feel God. God must have left me. I don't feel God. I did something wrong. Listen, feelings are real, but they're not the foundation of your faith. So we trust God's committed to us. The third thing, I love this one. Samuel says, remember what he's done. Remember what he's done. Look at verse 24. Only fear the Lord and serve him faithfully with all your heart, for consider what great things he's done for you. He's talking to Israelites. Now, it's hard to imagine after everything they've seen, they so quickly forgot what God's done. I mean, talk about wild miracles. Just like that, they forgot. Don't we do the same thing? God has done so much for you and I. God's brought us so far. God's brought freedom in our lives. He saved us. He changed us. The first time we hit a crisis, like, God, why'd you leave me? And we forget. Listen, gratitude is the ultimate antidote to discontentment. I know some of you are sitting here this morning probably like, well, God's never done anything for me. Baloney. You're here. You're here so you know he loves you. You're here so I'm hoping he saved you. He's done something for you. But how easy do we forget? Listen, I've been married this January 30 years. Ministry for 26 years. Can I tell you, I forget what God's done for me. I forget because this last 7 months have been the worst 7 months part of my life. And so I sit here today, I look at my situation, I say, God, where are you at? What are you doing? Where are you at? Why'd you leave me? missionary on a Sunday night, which that's like a double negative. A Sunday night and you have a missionary, that's like one you skip out of. But we were the kind of family that we could not skip out. Had to be there. Missionary spoke. Did anybody feel called? I mean, I just felt God all over me. I went down. Before that, you know what my destiny was? I was going into family business. I was going to haul rock. That's what I was doing. I was a truck driver. My dad, my uncles, my cousins are all truck drivers. They haul rock, millings, asphalt, that kind of deal. That's what I was going to do. But God called me. God called us to be missionaries. So exciting. I mean, it's awesome. Okay, that's so cool. So we tell our church where we're at. Hey, we're going to be missionaries. Like, all right, good luck. Goodbye. And we're cut off. We have no paycheck. We have no home. What do you do? God opened a house in Chickasha. They had a church had a missions house fully furnished. I mean, unbelievable. Let us live there while we raise our budget. So many times we were missionaries. We had no money. Go to the mailbox. Take our eyes off of that and look at the here and now and say, God. And Samuel says, consider what great things he's done for you. Listen, Israel wanted a king who would fight their battles, but their human kings would ultimately fail them. We know centuries later, God gave him another king born in a manger who didn't take from the people, actually gave his life for the people. Listen, if you're here this morning and you're living in the fallout of a poor choice, or maybe you're tempted to look at the world and say, I want what they have. I want you to listen to Samuel's final words. Turn back to the Lord, serve him faithfully with all your heart, and consider what great things he's done for you. The enemy wants you to take your eyes off of those, put them on the things of the world, and what you don't have, what you're going through. Won't you stand with us this morning? I want to wrap it up. Ask you a couple questions to consider this morning. I want you to consider what areas of your life are you tempted to be like the rest of the world rather than trusting God's path for you. I want you to ask yourself this morning, when anxiety hits, do you tend to rush towards human, tangible solutions before turning to God in prayer? Third thing, maybe ask yourself this, how can you actively cultivate a heart of gratitude this week by considering the great things he's done in your life? So where are you at this morning? Three commands: don't turn aside after empty things. Trust God's commitment to you. The worship team to sing this song for us this morning. This is how I'd like to end. Would you end thinking about these three commands? Not turning aside after empty things, trusting in God's commitment to you, and remembering why he's done. Could you make that commitment to the Lord this morning as we worship, as we sing? Could you just tell him, Lord, I'm going to stop turning aside to empty things. Lord, I'm going to trust your commitment to me. And Lord, I'm going to remember what you've done in my life. Would you commit to the Lord those three things as they lead us in worship this morning? Would you lead us in song this morning?
No.
challenge for you this morning, church. It's so easy to get a cycle of forgetfulness. Here's my challenge for you. I want you to get a notebook or journal, whatever you want. Start writing down the miracles God's done in your life. I want you to keep a record. So then next time you hit a crisis, you go back and you look every time God did something for you. And let it be encouragement to you. Here's the deal, though. That's something you get to pass to your kids. You get pass that to your grandkids, and they'll get to go back and read how God provided for mom, dad, how God provided for grandma. And they'll see the times, and they'll see God after time after time after time providing for them. And let there be encouragement to them one day to know just because they're in a crisis doesn't mean God left them. But look at the history God's left. I encourage you, start writing down. Go back and remember the means again. Write it down so you can look at it. Your kids can look at it. Your grandkids look at how faithful God is. Lord bless you guys.